After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Pitch. Swing and a long drive, deep left, way back, gone!
Welcome in to another Baseball America podcast. I'm Kyle Glazer. We're continuing our Team Top 10 Prospects podcast series today with the Pittsburgh Pirates. We're going to talk about what was behind Andy Rodriguez's rise in 2023, an update on Henry Davis after his first full professional season, and what to make of Nick Gonzalez and where he is as a prospect right now. To do all that, I'm joined by my friend and former colleague, Mark Chiarelli. Mark was a web editor for us at Baseball America for a number of years. He has since moved on to another role, but he continues to do the Pirates Prospect Handbook chapter for us every year. We're glad to have him back on. Mark, good to see you, my friend.
Hey, buddy. How are you?
Doing all right. We're going back to 2019 here, just like old times.
That's right.
Mark, you've done the Pirates system for us for a number of years now, and you've seen it kind of shift and change. They went into a full-scale rebuild with the hire of Ben Cherington. And look, this is a team, just to be frank, that is not competitive in the major leagues right now. They know it. They're not pretending to be. This is about the future and building up a farm system and getting to a point where they can contend, hopefully for an extended period. They're still a little bit away from doing that. But given the importance of the farm system to this franchise and its future outlook, how do you assess it right now?
Well, I think we're finally getting to the point where you're starting to see these guys get to the upper levels. And it feels like, I don't want to say the clock is starting to tick yet, but you can at least see that it's coming. And you're starting to see a more crystallized version of a lot of names that I think Pirates fans are familiar with. I think when I came on this podcast last year, I talked about the depth in the system and how I thought it was kind of sneaky in the mix for you all as one of the top farm systems in baseball. I don't know that I would feel as strongly right now as I did 12 months ago. I think the depth piece is still a really impressive part of this farm system, but it was a little bit of an uneven year for some of the guys at the top. But generally speaking, there's this big cluster of guys who have been in the system, been in the program for a while, and now they're getting to Double A, they're getting to Triple A. You know, O'Neill Cruz graduates last year and gets to the majors. You're starting to see it. I don't think it's going to be particularly competitive this year at the major league level, but you get the sense that what's building is finally going to come to fruition sooner rather than later.
Yeah, it's certainly a process. This is a club that has failed to win 70 games each of the last three full seasons in the majors, 69 wins, and they went 19-41 during the shortened 2020 season, 61-101 2021, 62-100 in 2022. So they have a ways to go. They did win the first ever draft lottery. They will have the number one overall pick this year. That will help them continue to add talent. But you're right. These guys are starting to progress to the upper levels of the system. And first and foremost among them was Andy Rodriguez, who at this time last year was considered an intriguing prospect, an athletic catcher they'd acquired from the Mets for Joey Lucchese. Again, interesting guy, not necessarily a top guy. He changed that this season, went from high A all the way to triple A, finished among the minor league leaders in OPS, doubles, total bases, extra base hits. Really one of the more impressive seasons of any player in the minors. And with that, he's now the number one prospect in the system. What can you tell us about Andy Rodriguez, what was behind the strides he made, and what he projects to be now?
Yeah, well, you mentioned the trade with the Mets. What a haul that's looking like right now, even compared to when we talked about Andy a year ago. But I think the thing with Andy Rodriguez is that he always kind of had those hitterish traits. He could always put the ball in play. I think he's hit at least 290, 292 every full season year in the minors. But you started to see that power, especially after July 1 tick up. And I think that it's not top of the scale exit velocity. I know that you posted average exit velos for every guy in the top 100, and he's at around 87 miles an hour. So it's middle of the road, but it's just the ability to parse through balls and strikes. I think the ability to find the barrel and then know which pitches to turn on and damage. And he can do it from both sides of the plate, which I think is obviously super valuable. So he just kind of pieced it together. And I think, you know, he had a really good year start to finish. That July 1st date was kind of the indicator. I think from that point on, he was maybe the most prolific kind of slugger in all of the minors. And I think part of that was just getting comfortable with upper level pitching, but it was also, I think, getting comfortable too, kind of in his role. They had a better set schedule catching. He just kind of found his footing there. And I think as far as arrow up guys in this system, he is easily the number one success story from the last 12 months.
Yeah, you mentioned his role, and that's always been sort of the question with him. He's such a good athlete. It's, do you leave him as a catcher? Do you let him play the outfield? How much do you move him around? And he's not the biggest guy, and that's why there are some questions about how much is he going to catch, just because the long wear and tear and the grind of a full season, even just, you know, pulling him up on video at AAA this year, it's not the typical build you see from a catcher. Where is he likely to end up? What do the Pirates hope will happen? And what do opposing evaluators see as the most likely outcome?
I think what the Pirates hope happens is that he's at least 55, 60% of the time at catcher with that athleticism to kind of move around. I think it's that athleticism. And also, I think just kind of the incremental defensive progress that at least gives you some optimism that he can make it work. I think, you know, another guy we're going to talk about now is Henry Davis in a little bit. And I think that if you kind of compare and contrast them at catcher, I'd give them roughly the same kind of probability to stick behind the plate. I think last year, prior to the shift changes, I might have been a little more bullish on second base as kind of a significant part of that defensive pie. But he is athletic enough where you can squint and make it work either at second base or at left field. But I think that there's catching ability there. And it was still raw, probably more raw than you'd want for a guy who got the AAA at this point. A lot of pass balls, but it got better as the year went on. He gets pretty positive reviews, both internally and externally, for the way he kind of works with pitchers, for the way he kind of controls the game. So I think there's some optimism there, but I don't necessarily think he's going to be solely behind home plate when all said is done. I think there's value in his ability to move around for you.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, got to AAA at the very tail end of last year. What's the timeline? Because we've seen the Pirates bring some guys up, especially last year, really let them get their feet wet. It seems like, at least from the outside looking in, there's a pretty strong chance he makes his Pirates debut and potentially even takes over as one of their primary catchers, maybe second half of the season. What's the timeline they're operating under?
I think that's a totally reasonable timeline. I mean, right now it's Austin Hedges ahead of him on the depth chart. So I even could see him getting an opportunity here, maybe not to win a job right out of spring training, but if he makes another positive impression, maybe you get to May or June and you turn the keys over at least, you know, 50, 55% of the time to Andy Rodriguez and see what you got there.
Absolutely. So we talked about Andy being an athletic switch hitter who produced at the upper levels of the minors and shows a lot of good traits. There are some really high-end talents in this system, at least from a pedigree perspective. You look at Tamar Johnson, who is considered arguably the top pure hitter in last year's draft class, went fourth overall. You have Henry Davis, who was the number one overall pick in the 2021 draft. Ultimately, what was it that elevated Andy over those guys?
Yeah, it's a good question. And I actually went into the fall, went into this reporting process with Andy and Tamar flipped. I had Tamar kind of as the number one, the incumbent heading in. And I think just through talking with people both inside the system and outside, it's tough to ignore a lot of the positive indicators in the proximity with Andy. I don't necessarily want that to look like a knock on Tamar Johnson, but he's a prep hitter who didn't face the best competition in high school. I know he has a lengthy showcase circuit history, but there could be some growing pains there. He's a long way away, and ultimately I think just kind of that mix for Andy won out. But it was close for a while, but as I got through the reporting process and kind of the more people I talked to, it was Yeah, you really should pay attention to Endy. Like, we're not ignoring it. He has certainly elevated his profile relative to maybe even what people thought midway through last season.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you look at what he did, and again, athletic, switch hitting, you know, at least part-time catcher. That's a really, really good player. And again, he's only, you know, his age 22 season, got to AAA and did what he did. Average, power, on base, everything across the board. So it's hard to have a better season than Endy Rodriguez did. And, you know, the profile, the age, the context, it's all in his favor too. So certainly something you can't ignore and shouldn't ignore. He was a clear-cut top 50 overall prospect for us at BA. And again, even the people who say, you know, we're not sure he's a catcher, they still think he's a top 50 guy, just maybe more closer to 35, 40 than maybe 20. Either way, a really good player that a lot of people like and think has a very bright future. Mark, you mentioned that the discussion for number one, if you will, was Endy Rodriguez and Tamar Johnson. Notably, Henry Davis was not mentioned in that discussion. And for the most part, typically a guy that is the first overall pick in his draft after his first full season, more often than not, is a number one type of prospect in their system. And you mentioned he wasn't really in the conversation here. What were the reviews of Henry Davis's first full season? He was, you know, limited by injuries, only got into 59 games. But what ultimately pushed him kind of outside the discussion for number one overall prospect? And with that, how concerning is it?
Yeah, I think, well, I mean, you mentioned the injuries, and I think that's a big part of it. Like, we just haven't seen a lot of Henry Davis since he got drafted because of wrist injuries, you name it. It's been two limited pro seasons so far. That played into the evaluation. I think some people who saw him in Arizona were a little surprised maybe at some of the stiffness at the end of the year defensively. I think that there's still a lot of optimism, or you can find a lot of people who think that he can hit for power and can be a pretty good hitter. So I think that that at least keeps you in that conversation on the periphery of number one. But to me, if anything, there were more questions defensively. There was questions about his ability to stay on the field. And I think there's even some questions about, is he going to either bend or adapt his approach to allow him to stay on the field, to allow him to accrue at bats and to get better and to get that seasoning at the upper levels, because so far it hasn't happened.
Yeah, you mentioned that approach and being willing to make changes. What you're kind of getting at there is he was hit by a pitch 20 times in 59 games. And some of that is where he stands and his unwillingness to back off the plate. You know, sometimes we talk about catchers having trouble staying on the field. It's because concussions, or they just get so dinged up back there. For him, he's not getting dinged up when he's wearing the catcher's gear. He's getting dinged up when he's in the batter's box. How much of that is a point of contention, debate between him and the Pirates? And just what are you kind of hearing on that based on your reporting?
Yeah, from what I know, they've talked to him about it, and they've tried to get him to understand. You know, it's a fine line because everyone says he's a very competitive guy. And obviously you don't want to lose that if you're in the Pirates player development, but you don't want to lose him either to games. So I think they've tried to get him to understand it. I don't know how open to the conversation. Well, I think he's convicted in his ways. It's obviously got him to where he is. So it's a little bit of a give and take, but it's kind of what he does. He bends over, he kind of hangs over the inside part of the plate. He's not going to seed inside pitches to you. And it's certainly been a conversation piece between him and Pirates player development.
Yeah. In general, talking to opposing scouts outside of the Pirates organization, you know, one of the things that I've talked about, Jeff Ponce, who saw a lot of Henry Davis, has talked about, and just, you know, conversations we've picked up on with evaluators around the game is, you know, Henry Davis looks like, you know, a good player, to be sure, not someone that, you know, the Pirates took first overall and it's, you know, red flag sirens everywhere. Certainly a guy who, as you mentioned, there's some conviction, can hit and hit for power, but also not a guy that they felt like is a number one overall draft pick type of talent or type of player. What were you kind of hearing in that regard? And ultimately, what does Henry Davis project to be?
No, I think that's fair. I mean, I remember talking to one evaluator kind of near the end of the season, and I don't want to say they gave him a mulligan because of the injuries, but it was like, you know, I'm going to account for the fact that he could be rusty, hasn't played in a while, but to me, Endy Rodriguez at this point is notably ahead of where Henry Davis is. I still think that ultimately just because of the position he plays, the power potential. You're looking at a solid everyday catcher. If he can stay healthy, if he can remain mobile enough behind the plate. And I think too, part of the thing defensively is that he has a plus arm. Like it's incredible arm strength, but there have been some concerns, I think, about kind of the footwork and how that has led to some inaccuracy, and it just hasn't allowed the arm to play maybe as much as evaluators hope to, because they knew kind of what he's working with back there. So even if he could maybe throw a little bit better, maybe that helps elevate it a little bit too. So I still think it's everyday catcher. It's a guy who's part of the core of whatever the next phase of Pirates baseball is. I might stop short of you know, all-star catcher. You know, it's more to me solid big leaguer than it is all-star type ceiling.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's very fair. And again, in line with a lot of what we've seen and heard and our looks as well. It'll be interesting to see what he can do with a full season of health potentially in 2023. Like you said, maybe some of that stiffness was just rust from not playing. And maybe if he's out there, you know, somewhat more consistently, everything loosens up. We just have to see. But I know that's going to be one of the more interesting subplots, I feel like, of the Pirates minor league season in 2023 is, you know, how often is Henry Davis on the field? What is he showing us in year two? And what adjustments has he made? Because, again, clearly talented, but to get to that all-star level that you kind of hope for when you have a number one overall pick, there's some improvements that are going to have to be made. Mark, one of the more interesting guys in the system, we've talked about this. They have these, you know, high-profile guys, Tamar Johnson, Henry Davis, and other guys who have really shot up, Andy Rodriguez being one of them. Luis Ortiz, now the top pitching prospect in the Pirates system, got up to the majors last year and again really vaulted over some guys that were bigger names in terms of, you know, where they were drafted, kind of their pedigree and, you know, where they kind of ranked going into last year. What did Luis Ortiz do and what does he project to be moving forward? What makes him the number one pitching prospect in the system right now?
Well, I think that the number one thing he did was throw the hardest fastball that any Pirates starter had since, in the StatCaster, I think, since Gerrit Cole. So that's enough to get your attention in the system. But, you know, I actually thought of you when I was thinking about Luis Ortiz, because I remember that you wrote the story about how the Astros had a really good track record of finding guys who are a little bit older in the Dominican Republic and developing them as pitchers when a lot of the industry kind of passed by. And I think the Luis Ortiz timeline and that story syncs with that, in that I think he was $25,000 sign at 18, 19 years old. Pandemic happens and he comes back and it's just elevated stuff. It's easy gas mid to upper 90s. He's touched triple digits pretty easily. They worked with him this year on pairing the two seam and getting more out of the two seam in addition to the four seam. And I think he now has two different fastballs that he feels comfortable throwing. And the slider has great shape. You'd like to see him land it a little bit more, but the arsenal is there. And I think that the last kind of piece there is polish and a changeup. And that's what's maybe holding him back from a guy who can turn through an order, you know, in a third time. But just kind of the building blocks there, especially when you look at some of the other pitchers in this system, it's the biggest upside for me of any arm. And I think, you know, I don't really see a clear-cut frontline starter in this system right now. But he's got some of the ingredients that at least make you think that he could find a home in the rotation for a while.
Yeah, it's encouraging. Again, you can never have too much pitching depth. And as you know, the Astros have shown, having the guys who are the big name guys, you know, hit and come through for you. Think about, you know, Lance McCullers was a top pick and, you know, he certainly developed into the type of pitch they hope for, but also having these unheralded guys come through, it can make a huge, huge difference. And, you know, developments like this are certainly encouraging. I do want to ask, how much of this, if any, do you give credit to the Pirates kind of revamping their entire player development apparatus? Because for a long time, sadly, the Pirates were known for having talented guys, but not maybe getting the most from them, or having some other guys that just never really got better. Seeing a guy like this take off as he did, how much of that do you credit to the Pirates player development system?
A lot. I think, you know, I don't want to say that it's flipped, But as you were talking about Henry Davis, there's injury questions. He hasn't quite performed like you would want from a number one pick. I think you could almost verbatim say the same thing about Nick Gonzalez. I think Leover Paguero didn't have the greatest season. The question marks at the top right now of the system for me are actually the bats. And you start to look at Luis Ortiz, that's an arrow up. I think Quinn Priester, while he may not be a number one, I think is still really high floor. We'll get there and be part of a rotation. Even if you look at the work that they've done with Bubba Chandler in terms of it's a really raw prospect, but it's an elite fastball already. And you're starting to see them stack building blocks on top of that. So to me, I think there are actually some encouraging signs within the Pirates pitching development. I think another guy too, he's not on this list anymore, but what they were able to continue the momentum that the Yankees kind of unlocked with Roansy Contreras. And I think he's an interesting piece as well. So yeah, you have to give their pitching development credit with Luis Ortiz. And I think that there's actually kind of a slew of interesting arms, even guys who didn't crack the 10 here. If you wanted to go to like a Jerry Jones, Anthony Solometto, even, you know, they drafted a couple guys, Hunter Barco, I think once he gets healthy, could be interesting. They are super high on Kyle Nicholas now that he has a second year in their system. So you start to kind of peel back some of the arms and it's pretty interesting.
Yeah, it's funny. You talk about young guys in the big leagues. Mitch Keller. I mean, Mitch Keller was a top prospect who really, really, really struggled his first 3 years. And last year, you know, had a pretty solid season. His first 3 years, he had an ERA over 6 and, you know, just struggled really in every regard. You know, walks, missing bats. It was not anywhere what you thought it would be when he was coming up through the system. And last year, again, sub 4 ERA. You know, logged innings, strikeouts went in the right direction, walks went in the right direction. I mean, good things all around. So I think at the very least, you're starting to see guys make progress at all levels. And, you know, that's certainly an encouraging development for the Pirates moving forward. All right, Mark, those four are kind of the main guys in the system. Those are their four top 100 prospects. I want to dive into some of the other guys in the system with you. First, we're going to take a quick break.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Why do I use Indeed for our hiring at Baseball America? Because it takes so much of the busy work out of hiring and does it for me. I can find highly qualified candidates in one place, set up interviews, and communicate with them all on Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualification preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So you use Indeed. As you use it more, the better it gets. And listeners to this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Baseball America. Just go to Indeed.com/Baseball America right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Baseball America. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger. For the ones who get it done.
Welcome back to another Baseball America Team Top 10 Prospects podcast. I'm Kyle Glazer here with Mark Chiarelli breaking down the Pittsburgh Pirates farm system. All right, Mark, we've talked about the guys at the top of the system. You alluded to this a little bit earlier when you mentioned that some of the Pirates position players have gone backwards a little bit. And Nick Gonzalez is someone who was a top draft pick and a top 100 prospect, got to Double A last year, and just his overall performance so far as a pro has been not bad, but also a little bit underwhelming. He's now no longer in the top 100. He's also no longer even in the top half of his top 10, which, given his draft pedigree, what was expected from him is certainly a surprising development. Where is he in his development right now? What are evaluators seeing, and what's the path moving forward for Nick Gonzalez?
He's such a confounding guy, even for evaluators, I think. I think if you see Gonzalez quickly, maybe it's a quick trip in and you see him for two or three games and you see the short punchy swing and you see a lot of the things or the quick indicators that tell you, oh, that's a hitterish guy. Like, that guy's going to hit forever. But I think some of the folks who have been on him either for a while or sat and watched him for a long period of time, you start to pick up on, man, there's a lot of swing and miss there. And there's some red flags that you don't necessarily expect. He's another, I mean, like I said, we could have the same injury conversation that we had with Henry Davis, where it's just, you know, you need to be out there. And he missed 2 months this year. He missed time in 2021. That certainly hurt him. I think there was maybe some concern even with the nagging wrist injury last year. And I don't know how that's impacted maybe some of the mechanical issues that he's going through. But I think to some evaluators, he's a guy kind of caught in between. Is he chasing power? Is he more of the hitterish guy who can put up 10 to 15 homers, but hit at a 280 clip, you know, 290, et cetera? Or is he going to try to put more over the fence and sacrifice some of the contact ability? And right now it just kind of feels like he's in between.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned the contact ability. So I went in to see Nick Gonzalez, New Mexico State, played Arizona State in 2020 before the pandemic shut everything down. I was there for spring training, but there was a Tuesday night game. It was freezing in Tempe. And I went to see it because Spencer Torkelson, Nick Gonzalez. And one of the things I remembered seeing that kind of made me raise my eyebrows and have some questions was he was swinging and missing through 87, 88 mile an hour fastballs from a lefty up, you know, elevated fastballs at 87, 88. He was swinging through them pretty consistently. The lefty was Eric Tolman. And again, it's early in the season. It was freezing. It's a midweek game. You know, no one's going to be at their sharpest in that environment. So kind of filed it away as, you know, this could just be, hey, it's a bad look. It's a bad environment. It's a bad setup. It happens. But it was something that I definitely noticed and didn't expect to see from a guy who had been lauded as this premium contact guy. A, that he was swinging at those pitches, but B, also they just kept missing them over and over at that velocity band. I mean, how significant are the swing and miss concerns here? Are we talking to the point that it'll prevent him from really being any sort of significant contributor in the big leagues? Or are we talking about it might limit him to more of a second division starter, but still a guy who plays every day?
I think it's more the latter, but they are concerned. I mean, he struck out 33% of the time in his first taste against Double A. I get that you're adjusting to a new level, but for, I believe you said premium plus, you know, potential hitting ability, that just doesn't, you know, that's a big red flag. I think that the same kind of swing and miss issues in the zone continue to follow him even now. And I think it's paired with just some over aggressiveness, and I think the Pirates would like to see the swing rate and the swing rate against sliders, specifically sliders that are going out of the zone, come down a little bit. I think that's been a bugaboo for him so far. And then he just has missed some fastballs in the zone that you know, I think evaluators who are just watching him would expect him to hit. All that said, there are still people who look at him and say he puts the bat on the ball, you know, there's maybe average power ability. You know, it's a guy who's going to get there and he's going to get an opportunity. I think the second division regular is probably more fair. I think I wrote in his scouting report that the ceiling of still a solid first division guy is there, but there's just some question marks. And this has been no secret for him, you know, since you saw him in college. It's most of the value is going to be tied to that bat. I don't think he's anything more than kind of a functional at best second baseman who you can stick out there. But it's definitely a mixed bag right now.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned the power. I did see that when I saw him in the fall league this year, you know, hit a home run opposite field. I mean, drove it out to straightaway right field. So, I mean, it's funny, you thought he'd be more of a contact bat, but now there's more thump in there. And you look across his minor league line, he's got a 506 slugging percentage, which is not really the hitter you thought he'd be. So it'll be interesting to see what he can do. And like you said, part of it is staying on the field. He's had trouble with injuries, and even this was an abbreviated season for him. So, you know, we'll see. But certainly a guy, like I said, that, you know, prominent, a lot of people liked him. A lot of scouts has really good track records, really believed in him. So it's going to be just really interesting to see if he can cut that swing and miss rate down, double A, triple A, and if he will be a part of the Pirates' future. Mark, one other guy in this top 10, now we're going to shift back to the positive, and surprise, surprise, it's another pitcher, who kind of popped up a little bit in some ways this year and really did have a strong season, at least the double A level, was Mike Burrows. Sure. This is a guy who, you know, 11th round high school pick, you know, had been a prospect in top 30s before, but was never necessarily considered one of their top guys. Went out this year, 22-year-old in double A, and just flat out dominated. Got the bump to triple A, you know, got hit a little bit harder there, but all in all, still a pretty good season. A lot of whiffs, perfectly fine strikeout, walk rate, excuse me. The stuff looked good. What's kind of the review on him, and, you know, how realistic was this breakout?
I actually remember around at the Futures game reading what BA had to say about him and lumping him in with some of the best, you know, raw stuff of anyone they saw at the Futures game. And that was certainly an indicator. He's been since the pandemic, he's been a data darling. I think I wrote within their system because of the carry on the fastball and the spin rates. The curveball is this mid 70s kind of 12-6, almost old school looking curve, and he tunnels it well. And it's just those two pitches work really well together, and they work really well in short bursts. What he has been tasked with is throwing the changeup enough and throwing it effectively where you can look at him and envision some kind of starter role as opposed to a two inning hammer out of the bullpen, you know, the kind of the bulk guy that you can deploy at will in winnable games. So I think the stuff is really loud. There's some injury concern there too. I think he missed time in 2021 with an oblique injury. There's been some shoulder issues. So I think some concerns over whether he can hold up over the course of the year that he still has to answer. But as far as, you know, the fastball with high spin that you can dot kind of upper half, pair that with the curveball that a lot of guys swing and miss through, it's really fun.
Yeah, given the two pitches, the health track record, is the bullpen the most likely destination for him?
I think and a lot of it hinges too on what kind of team the Pirates are in 2 or 3 years. But I think if you are to look at this wave of talent coming through and start to envision a path back to contention, I think Burrows ultimately makes sense in that 2 to 3 inning. I'm based in Boston, so an easy comp might be like a Garrett Whitlock type guy at the back of the bullpen. He's got nasty stuff, but you throw him every 3 days as opposed to five. And I think that would be a pretty good outcome for him.
Mark, one of the more fascinating players in this top 10, and I know we're kind of bouncing back to the middle of the 10, but I have to ask about him just because he's so fascinating, is Bubba Chandler.
Bubba Chandler.
Two-way standout in high school, was committed to play quarterback at Clemson, signed with the Pirates, went out this year, did a little bit of both, spent some time on the mound, got some time in the batter's box, struggled at the plate, got on base, but, you know, didn't hit for average or much power. Where on the mound, he was, you know, impressive in some ways. I mean, didn't get hit a ton, missed a lot of bats, was a little wild. The walks were higher than he wanted to see. But again, just kind of this great athlete, raw ball of clay, doing a little bit of both. What were the thoughts on him after his first professional season, and what's kind of the path for him moving forward? Is it as a two-way guy? Is it as a pitcher, position player? What's next?
Well, we wrote about it plenty when he was a draft prospect. He is a sick athlete. And I think that the Pirates even were, I don't want to say surprised, but he came into, I believe, spring training last year and tested amongst the best athletes in the system in any number of things. Like we're talking about just a special type of athletic guy. As far as the two-way thing goes, most evaluators I talk to are willing to acknowledge that there is raw power there, with a healthy amount of skepticism that A, he has the time to ever, you know, get to the point where he can access it enough, and B, whether that's worthwhile because of the ingredients that you mentioned, pitching. His fastball, 95 to 97, Kind of similar to Burrow's in terms of carry already. He could throw it for strikes. I mean, I know it's against lower level hitting, and you can kind of get by on a fastball like that sometimes for a couple innings at a time. But he was throwing it right by people this year, and he was holding that velo deep into starts, despite this really being his first full year in a starting pitcher workload. So I think that was very encouraging. Like you said, the walks are a little bit of a concern, but I mean, when you're talking about that kind of athlete, you combine that with the age and you hope that he can iron it out and get it to a point where the fastball plays. His changeup is pretty good. And I think that he was kind of in between at times, I think a curveball or a slider. And I think they've gotten it to a point now where they've settled on a shape in kind of the preferred breaking ball. And now he's just got to actually go out there and repeat it and do it over consecutive starts and whatnot. But yeah, a lot of really exciting things on the mound.
Yeah, I remember coming out of the draft, talking to some evaluators who were just saying, you know, he's so raw. And that was the thing about him, that there was a time when he was getting, you know, mocked in the first round a little bit. But when I talked to high level decision makers, they were saying, you can't take this guy in the first round because it's so raw, but you can dream on the athlete. And you mentioned the control. That is something that'll have to come. But, you know, if he does just start focusing solely on pitching, more reps, more experience, you know, that's a situation where, yeah, you could definitely see them coming down there. You mentioned most evaluators think that is probably going to be the best path for him, just developmentally. Have the Pirates given any indication of when they would make that decision to just let him do one thing versus both? What does that kind of timeline look like?
So they hadn't made it yet, as far as when I was kind of going through this chapter. The party line was, he is athletic enough and has enough power and he shows enough for us to at least allow him the opportunity to continue to do it. I think reading between the lines, they see him as a pitcher first. I wouldn't be surprised if he didn't play in the field at all this past year. I think we've kind of given up on the shortstop thing. So you might be able to squeeze another year out of it, but I think at some point a decision will have to be made, and I would bet that it's putting him on the mound full time.
Yeah, it would be interesting to see what he can do with his attention fully on pitching, given what he did just this year, again, in terms of the stuff, in terms of, you know, not giving up a lot of hits, in terms of how many strikeouts he racked up while splitting his time and his attention. I think that just speaks to the very, very, very lofty potential he has on the mound. Mark, you mentioned some really good players who are not in the top 10 just by virtue of how good the system has become. Again, that's intentional. They're in a rebuild, and you should have a deep system given all the moves they've made with trades and collecting high draft picks. But Jared Jones, Anthony Solometo, Kyle Nicklaus, these are good players who are real prospects. I mean, how many guys were in the mix here for the top 10? You know, how many guys were locked for the top 10, and how many other guys were in the mix, would you say?
I think I ended on 14 or 15 names that I think all had reasonable arguments to at least consider them at the back of the top 10. You know, it's interesting, as I was preparing for this pod and even going back through, we've talked a bit about how the guys at the top, there's the Davis and the Gonzalez, and you'd like to see them take a step forward and kind of reach the ceiling, right? Like right now I'm looking at the system and seeing a ton of depth, but you'd love to see one or two guys take that leap and kind of rise back up a top 100 list or whatnot and feel better about this rebuild project. That said, when I look at the full 30, I see a lot of guys that I think have a good chance to be functional big league players at some point. Like I think that that list of 15 ends at Jared Triolo. I think I had him 15th when I turned him in. And to me, he's, you know, maybe in some weaker systems, he has a case at the back of the 10. He misses it here, but that's still a guy who can play multiple positions, great eye, great contact. That's a useful player. So they do have a lot of depth in the system, which I think is a encouraging thing. And I would say, yeah, Jared Jones, Jared Triolo, Anthony Solometo were the names where you kind of, the line stops right under them as far as top 10 consideration, at least for me.
Yeah, I mean, all those guys, again, I'm thinking about some of the systems at the back of our list, they would all be in there. I think they might be the Braves number 1, 2, and 3 prospect. you know, so again, there is depth here, and now it's a matter of, okay, getting a group to the majors and then maybe using the leftovers for trades whenever the time comes. That time is not now. This is still a team in the middle of their rebuild. They're not really at the end or approaching the end. Mark, those 15, you know, that top 15 was kind of clear cut, but there are always interesting guys at the back. Who are some sleepers in the back half of the list you think would be good to keep an eye on and could maybe pull Luis Ortiz and rock it up into the top 10 this time next year?
Sure. I've got two. One of them, it's been kind of a favorite of mine, even dating back to last year going through this process is Dariel Lopez. I think that I turned him in the early 20s. There's a really intriguing hitter there between the power potential, the contact ability, the actions, the ability to go the other way. His sweet spot is probably right center, which he played high A Greensboro. That can be kind of deceiving at times too. So you don't want to maybe overread the home away splits. But I think above average power potential, I think average to above average hitting ability. And there's some athleticism there, although it's unclear to me where he ends up in the field. I think he's played third base, he's played shortstop, he's outgrown shortstop at this point. He makes maybe too many mistakes right now in the field to trust him on the left side, but he's a guy that you'll find in the 20s on a list like this that I think has some intriguing characteristics. And I know that a couple of evaluators I talked to with other teams were kind of keeping tabs on him. I think he was Rule 5 eligible. He probably wasn't a serious Rule 5 candidate, but he's a guy who, if he gets blocked, you know, in this rebuild in Pittsburgh, I think there's a couple other organizations that liked him. And then one guy who kind of jumped on the scene and surprised me, it's a teenage catcher named Axel Plaz. I mean, I'm sure there's a million dart throws that we've had on podcasts like this in the past about guys who tore it up with the DSL or whatnot and came over to full season ball and had to make adjustments. But I know he impressed a lot of people within the system. He had a great summer. He went into Instructs. I know he impressed some of the hitting evaluators there as far as a guy who looked older than he is. Solid bottom half, power potential. They think he can stick at catcher. So That's a late 20s sleeper. You just kind of, I would tuck away as if you're really looking for 16, 17, 18 year old guys who could potentially pop in a year or two. He was a favorite of mine.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, you know, those DSL dart throws, as you mentioned, sometimes they turn out to be not a whole lot, but every now and then one of them really, really clicks. Mark, to kind of wrap it up here, the question I think every Pirates fan wants to know is, okay, we've been hearing about this great farm system and all these top picks who are big names, you know, top 10 overall guys, in some cases the number one overall pick or top five overall picks. When is it going to turn into a winning club in the major leagues? As we talked about, the Pirates have had four straight losing seasons, not just losing seasons. It's not like they've gone 80 and 82, 79 and 83. I mean, they have failed to win 70 games since 2018. They haven't finished higher than fourth in the division since 2016. So what is the time frame here for this team to get back to just a winning record? Let's start with that before we talk about playoff contention.
Yeah, I don't think it happens this year. I think a lot of the guys that you want to hitch this rebuild on are going to be in AAA this year, AA, AAA. Maybe they're up by the end of the year. Like maybe a Priester sneaks up there. You mentioned to Henry Davis. I think Andy Rodriguez will have a shot at some point earlier this year. So they're coming. I also think, as you just kind of step back, you mentioned that they have an opportunity, the number one pick in the draft, to add one more blue chipper at the top. And I think depending on what they want to do with Brian Reynolds, you would think that's one last chance for a talent infusion into the system. And then for me, you're kind of hitting the hyperdrive and it's time to go and it's time to see what you got. So I think 500, probably not this year. I think it's at next year. That's a reasonable expectation. I know a lot can change. The NL Central is not, it's not exactly murderer's row. So I think that, you know, you could look next year and start to get optimistic, but I think this crew of guys coming through the system still needs another probably full year of seasoning at the upper levels before it's time to really start looking at them in the majors.
Yeah, and we'll see what happens. Again, I know we're all going to be really curious to see what the Pirates do with the number one overall pick this upcoming draft. And also, you mentioned Brian Reynolds. Reportedly asked for a trade. You know, he's been rumored to have been on the block for a while. He's still a Pittsburgh Pirate as of today. And we'll see how that all sorts itself out and what it means for the Pirates and really both their present and their future. Mark, before we go here, any final thoughts on this system, this organization, anything at all?
No, it's a fun one. I think you nailed it as far as if Davis and Gonzalez can take a step forward this year and kind of return to where we envisioned them maybe 2 years ago, even at the beginning of 2021, I think the system looks a lot different at the top. So that's probably the number one thing that I'm watching for this year.
Absolutely. Well, I'll be keeping an eye on it for sure. Mark, thank you so much for joining us. It's good to see you again. Good to have you back on, and look forward to talking to you soon again for the A's.
Thank you, sir.
All right, everyone. That'll do it for another Baseball America podcast. Go ahead and give us a review on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, whatever platform you're listening on. We'd love to hear from you. For Mark Chiarelli, I'm Kyle Glazer. Thanks for listening. Have a good one, everybody.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications through LifeMD? LifeMD is now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
Probably the easiest thing I've ever done. The medication comes in the mail and it's very easy to use. I've been able to live my normal lifestyle and I've lost 20 pounds already and I've never felt better. It changed my life.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.